Mark Azoulay is an industry leader in psychotherapy and men's mental health. He's helped countless guys get back on their feet, deepen their relationships, and excel in their lives. Now he's taken all that he has learned and is sharing it with you. In each episode, Mark will interview an expert in the field of masculinity and men's work. We'll cover topics such as emotional intelligence, masculine identity, anger management, financial health, trauma recovery, marriage and divorce, ethics, and spirituality. Tune in and become a better man.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Mark Azoulay, and I'm here with Rashad Sutton. He is a business development expert that works for the Raleigh House, which is a wonderful treatment center here in Colorado. And he's a man in recovery himself, and his expertise is about building community. So Rashad, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this conversation because I think like where I first experienced recovery, especially like emotionally intelligent recovery, was in the rooms, right? Was doing AA. And then when I got through that, right, I was like, wait, why doesn't this exist in the world? You know, and a lot of my business, MTO, is about kind of providing that in something that is more expansive than recovery. So I'm excited to talk to you about your experience building community.
Yeah, I think, you know, I went to a treatment center. I'm sure we'll get into it. It was a 12-step centered treatment center. So exactly that thing of like immediately stepped into community and didn't feel like kind of alone on this journey of recovery. So it was very important.
Yeah. Did you have the same experience I did? Like, I don't think I heard men being emotional or talking about like anything challenging until I was in the rooms. Did you have that same thing?
Yeah. And it quickly, quickly changed. I feel like I had always been, I didn't think I knew it, but it's something I had been really longing for, to be able to really kind of express myself and talk about what was bothering me or even my triumphs, right? In a way that wasn't, boastful or trying to be bigger than. So yeah, it was really impactful.
Yes. Yeah. Not having that hierarchy. And we'll definitely talk about that, right? The kind of like one-upmanship that can be in so many male cultures. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. Like when you're in AA, once everybody hits the rock bottom, like there's no one-upmanship because we're all kind of coming back from zero in a way.
Yeah. I heard a man say very early in recovery that none of us flew in here on the wings of victory. Like, you know, none of us are kind of starting from the top and kind of dipping down. We're all struggling with something. And that's the reason that's what brought us here. So absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah. So let's pivot to your story. I mean, how'd you get into this work and how'd you become the man you are today?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because my story isn't one of like, you know, I didn't have a horrible background. I had a pretty normal upbringing. I grew up here in Denver, pretty normal family. You know, I always like to say it kind of like I got a car when I was 16, like no like extreme poverty or anything like that. Pretty normal story. The big thing for me was, you know, I was pretty decently successful. I was married pretty early, had a daughter pretty young, and I just drank a lot. But it was like, as long as my life was kind of in order, it didn't seem to be a problem. You know, I call it like my bent straw period. I was the guy at the bar with the bourbon on rocks with the bent straw because I'm too manly to drink out of a straw, you know, and I was just kind of that guy every weekend. And, you know, that led to copious amounts of cocaine use. But once again, I was always prided myself on waking up and going to work every day. And that kind of made it okay. You know, I was successful, so I don't really have a problem. I just can drink more than you. I can hold my liquor better than you.
Totally.
You
know? Yeah.
So it would be a problem if you did it, but I'm good at this. And that was a while, right? And then my cocaine use got pretty out of control. I had a suicide attempt, pretty deep into that. I just felt like I was, you know, I wasn't providing for my family. I was spending all our money on coke. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. And so to me, it felt like the way out was to, you know, I won't be a burden. Obviously didn't work. I'm still here. So I, after that, I was able to quit using cocaine. I stopped using it altogether. And that was kind of like, it seems like it would be great for this story, but it was actually really bad because it was self-will. And so that led me to believe, oh, I'm bigger than this thing. I can start and stop anything I want. I was able to put down coke. I'm fine. I moved out to California, started a new life, you know, that kind of like geographic solution, you know. My wife and I are still together. Things at this time, things are good. I've always kind of had this problem with the person who I present and the person who I am being at odds. So anytime I would get out of a supervised space, you know, the real me would come out. And I start doing things that shouldn't have been in character, but they actually were because that's who I really was. So all that to say, I was working, I was doing fine, and I start traveling a lot for work. So once I was traveling for work, you know, I'm trolling on bars and bars and online and looking for illicit drugs. You know, I start picking up cocaine and stuff again because nobody will know. And then that fateful night comes where someone offers me something. I think it's coke. I knew it wasn't coke. I knew it was meth. And that started me down this long, long road of addiction. You know, yeah. I have, you know, I don't know if this is appropriate to say, but I have a buddy that described it so perfectly. He says, you know, once you find your drug of choice, every other drug is like a hand job. It'll get the job done, but it's not what you want, you know? And, and that was me with meth. Like once I found it, I was off to the races, you know, and then it was the classic story. You know, pretty soon after that, my wife left, we separated. And that hit me kind of hard. So I stopped for a period because I'm the guy that can stop anything I want. I stopped and I met somebody actually in the program. And I asked her, I said, hey, man, I think I might have a problem. Can we talk about this? And we start talking. And I was like, yeah, well, since my wife left, I haven't picked up. I haven't done anything. It had been about 30 days. And she goes, oh, well, if you can stop on your own, then you're not one of us. And that was all I needed to know, right? I was like, oh, well, I'm not, I don't have a problem. You know, I made a mistake. I don't have a problem. So, you know, I kept that up for, a good couple months, you know, no drinking, no drugs, none of that. Until, you know, my wife didn't come back, you know. And so I remember very succinctly, I was at the gym and I was like, what am I doing this for? She's not here. She's not coming back. What am I doing this for? Mm-hmm. You want to use, you know? And so, you know, I got online and I found a dealer right then. And I remember when he texted me back, I left the gym. Like that's how like strong it was. You know, I was in the middle of a workout and I left. I left and soon after that I started, you know, back to using meth and it was pretty fast, my decline. It was pretty quickly. Lost my apartment, lost my job. That started this cycle that kind of like was for the next couple of years. I'd lose everything, I'd get clean, I'd get everything back, and I'd lose everything again. I'd get clean, I'd lose everything again. And that happened for the next 4 or 5 years. Until I finally, I was moved back home. I'm here in Colorado and I'm doing pretty bad. I'd lost a couple jobs. I had pulled on all my favors. I had done everything I could do to like rebuild myself, lost jobs, gained jobs, lost jobs. I remember very distinctly, right? My sister comes to me and she says, hey, I think you can do this, but I think you need some help. She goes, will you go to treatment if I pay for it? And what's so impactful about that for me is like I needed, I think it's different for everybody, but the message that had depth and weight to me was that she believed in me, is that she's like, I'll put my money where my mouth is. I think you can do this. I guess it's important to say that at this point, I had kind of resigned myself to being a junkie. You know, I remember clearly the day I started describing myself as a junkie, you know, and I was like, if I'm going to be a junkie, I'm going to be like the best junkie. I'm going to have all the connects. I'm going to know all the stuff. I'm going to do all the things. And so for her to say, hey, I think you can do this, it was the first time I believe that somebody saw me as something other than a junkie. She thought I could be successful. And like I said, put her money where her mouth was. She takes me out up into the woods, up to Evergreen. And I get there and I love this story, actually. There's a guy and he's his white hair and he's kind of an older guy and he's shaking kind of like uncontrollably. I burst into tears. I'm crying. I'm praying internally. Oh God. That's me. You know, I made it. I made it before that happened to me. He's like, I'll do whatever they tell me to do here. I'm gonna really put my effort into this. I don't want to end up like this guy. The thing that makes it funny is I find out 2 weeks later that the guy has cerebral palsy. It has nothing to do has nothing to do with drugs. He was born so like that. But it's
been like that his whole life.
You know, it scared me. It scared me. And, you know, this program that I was at was all 12-step based. And so it was really just a group of men out in the woods going, hey, man, you got to find something to believe in or else you're going to die. You know? But so lovingly, right? It was it's hard to express. I guess the first day I was there, we did a new guy circle where everybody goes around, tells who they are, what their drug of choice is. And, I told them, you know, I'm Rashad and I'm doing meth and, you know, mainly ingesting it, live with my mom, blah, 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 ready for a change. And in the corner of the room, this guy shouts out, you were losing your mind. And I was like, yeah, yeah, I was. And he goes, it's okay, bro. So was I. And that thing hit me. You know, I was so ashamed of my drug of choice. You know, it's like the drug not to do. It's like on billboards, not even once. And I was so ashamed. And here I was in this room full of people who were struggling with the same thing. And we're all trying to get better. And we're all here to help each other. It was huge for me. I just felt such solidarity in that room. I just felt like I belonged for the first time in a long time. I really jumped in, with everything I had. I really wanted to prove my sister right. I wanted to change my life. And now I had this new group of friends, you know, when you get immersed, especially in like street drug culture, there's this whole world open to you that you're not aware of. It's like all these kind of underground things that people are doing. These kind of, I know that guy. I know what he's up to. I know this guy over here. Even though you don't know them, you know what they're up to because you're up to the same stuff. And all my friends use drugs. All my friends were in this culture. So to walk into this place and be immediately embraced, simply because I was struggling with the same thing that they were, was huge. I felt, oh, I can do this. I instantly have a new group of friends, and friends who don't want anything from me, but for me to get well. And that was huge for me. I go from there. I end up doing sober living, which I think was huge, right? Now I'm living with a group of guys who are all focused on the same thing. We're all focused on recovery. And so, you know, we're doing nightly recaps. We're talking to each other about what our day was like, what our struggles were, as we're getting ready to go to meetings and things like that together, right? We're doing all of this together. And it was that thing, that camaraderie, that fellowship, you know. I still had to do the work for myself. I still had to, you know, find a sponsor and actually truthfully work these steps. So all that stuff was important, but having that support structure, being able to look to my left and to my right and see guys who were doing it with me, was huge. I still talk to a lot of those guys in, you know, in my litter, today. That's still who I bounce things off of, who I go to when things get hard or when things are great. That group of men, that I came through this with, I think that step is often overlooked, that idea of like, sober living and having a group of men that you can talk to, or if it's done, it's not done with that same kind of spirit, that kind of like, I'm in this, I'm immersed and I want to get this done. I think it was probably the biggest piece of my recovery, you know, being at a treatment center is a bubble. It's kind of easy to stay sober in treatment, you know. It's a little bit harder once you get outside of that and you have to deal with real world struggles and frustrations and that sort of thing. But here I am today, you know, I'm a little over 3.5 years still sober, working in the industry, helping other men to kind of find their way along this path. And it's I can't imagine doing anything different. Being able to help other men kind of gives purpose to the struggles and things I went through. You know, it makes it so that that time to me wasn't wasted. It's the only way that some of these other men can really relate to me. And so I can't imagine doing anything else now.
Yeah, that's a powerful story. I really enjoyed hearing that. And I can't wait to hear more about your ideas around community and how to bring that into the world, right? Because when you talk about that, I think back to my recovery journey and the guys I met along the way, and it's like, it's some of the closest people that ever been in my life. I mean, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I was going through the hardest thing I've ever went through with people that were also going through it. And like, you can't put any value on that. Like, that is such a powerful thing. It's awesome that you guys are still in connection and that, like, that like litter, like you said, is still running. So yeah, we're going to move to our commercial break. When we come back, we'll dive into the power of community, how to foster community, what it's, you know, how it can be resilient, help you kind of get back up. And then I also want to talk to you about kind of these cycles of recovery, because I think that's such a common theme of like, you know, resurrection, then burn down, then resurrect again, then like go over and over and over again. I think that really discourages a lot of people. And I'm hearing that a little bit in your story.
Absolutely.
So we'll move to our first commercial break. When we come back, we will dig more into these topics. See you on the other side.
Follow Voice America at facebook.com/Voice America for juicy updates from your favorite radio shows and podcasts.
Men's Therapy Online is now accepting new members. Men's Therapy Online offers a solution to the lack of outlets for emotional expression, positive role models, and access to meaningful milestone experiences. In our post-COVID world, loneliness is at an all-time high. Men need consistent community. Our society is rapidly changing. Old models of masculinity are falling at the task of promoting emotional intelligence and meaningful connection. Men's Therapy Online offers tools and experiences designed to help the man who is struggling to balance traditional male roles and emotional fluidity. Whether you need to get back on your feet or take your life to the next level, Men's Therapy Online has your back. We help our members become a true 21st century man, a man who is not burdened by the rapid change of society, but who contributes to it honorably. If you're interested in signing up and finding your band of brothers, go to menstherapy.online to learn more. That's menstherapy.online. Start your journey today.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Men's Therapy Podcast with Mark Azoulay. To reach the show today, please call 866-472-5791. That's 866-472-5791. Or send an email to podcast@menstherapy.online or visit www.menstherapypodcast.com. Now, back to the Men's Therapy Podcast.
Welcome back to the show. I'm here with Rashad Sutton, and we're talking about recovery and community. So when we last left, you know, you were in sober living, right? You had your tribe, your litter, like you called them, right? You guys are doing life together. And some of the stuff you talked about is so awesome, right? You said you're doing like nightly debriefs, right? And you're encouraging each other to go to meetings. I'm sure you're helping each other like get jobs and just deal with like life skills. Like it's a squad, right? Like it's a tribe to go through life. And I guess the question to kick it off is like, well, I guess one, from your story, what is it like now, right? Now that you're 3 years later. And two, like, how can we have that in normal life? Like we were saying over the break, like, we hope you don't have to get addicted to meth or addicted to drugs to like find your tribe. But it seems like that's the case. People need to go through something hard to find their people. So yeah, I'm curious on your thoughts on those two things.
Yeah, I mean, I think so there's two things, right? What's it like now? I still do a lot of that, right? I still do. I kind of have a rule personally that if someone asks me to go to a meeting, I go. You know, if I can go, if I have the room open in my schedule, I go. I need for the newcomer to see that it still works and it still works. That I'm not too big or too far along in my recovery journey to go to a meeting or to help the newcomer that I am you. I think, you know, we get, you know, the way my sponsor puts it, we get shiny in recovery. You know, we're like, you know, a new penny, you know, we get shiny and people want to be around that. And I know that when I was 30, 60, 90 days out, I didn't feel like those guys would want anything to do with me. You know, it's kind of still this dirty drug addict. And I didn't think that they would give me the time of day. And when they did, there was a huge burst of like self-confidence and this feeling of like, oh man, I'm still maybe worth something. And so I try to give that back today. I try to really give that back. I also try to be there. You know, not all of my friends are without, you know, some sort of return to use. So being able to love on them and love them back into the recovery space has been great. You know, even some of those who are like, hey man, maybe this isn't for me, to still be able to show them love and let them know, hey, I still care about you. I still want to see you. I still want to go to brunch with you. You know, I can't go clubbing with you, but I love you, man. I want to be around you. I found that kind of building that tribe, to your point, right? I think it takes a lot of vulnerability, to be honest, right? It takes a lot of being willing to give of yourself. You know, someone told me, you know, a couple of years ago, that the measure of friendship is not what you'll give to another person, but what you'll give up for another person. You know, so being able to sacrifice of my time, of my energy, those things are the things I think speak loudest in developing that tribe, right? I think the reason that we in recovery are probably a little bit more willing and able to do that is, I don't know. I wish I had something a little bit better, Mark. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I really don't know.
Yeah. I think for men in particular, right, we need to burn down to be humbled. You know, because I think a lot of guys, and I was like this, it sounds like you were like this, like we're just cocky, right? Like we're like, oh, I'm built different, right? I'm stronger, I'm smarter. There's like a grandiosity there, yeah, that I think we use to not feel insecure, right? Yeah. And like for guys like us, where that gets popped like real hard, I think we go down to this ashes and it's like, okay, well, I need to rebuild from this and I can't do it alone. right? I mean, I obviously think of the first step, right? Just being like, I can't do this alone. I need something, right? I'm powerless on my own to make these massive changes. And I think men need to be humbled. I mean, hopefully it doesn't have to be as catastrophic as our stories, but I think men need to be humbled so that we can come back stronger than ever.
100%. I think that idea, I call it, you know, being right-sized, right? For me, when I'm too big, I feel like a god. I feel like I deserve, you know, drugs and every other pleasure that on earth, right? And if I get too low, then I deserve the misery and things like that that come with destroying my life, you know? Luckily, the middle is huge. You know, there's a lot,
a lot of play in there.
There's a lot of play in the middle. But you're absolutely right. You know, it was me being humbled and being, you know, it's a big part of my story, right? Even in the very beginning of like having to accept help, I had to accept help to even get into treatment. I think you're absolutely right. I was at a place where, you know, it couldn't hurt to try. My way wasn't working.
Right. Yeah. And I think so many guys are isolated to the point where we just keep going, keep going, keep going. And another part of your story that stood out to me and is similar to mine is like, you know, as long as you're making money, as long as you're successful, as long as your wife is still in the home, you can do whatever the fuck you want. Right. And I think as guys, because our role is so squished into that, right, into being that provider, financial, being the wallet, right? Mm-hmm. As long as we're doing that, we get that like kind of two-faced thing that you were talking about where, you know, there's a work me and there's a drug me, right? Mm-hmm. I had the same thing, you know, a lot of my stuff was in college, but like, look, as long as I was getting good grades, yeah, like nobody could tell me what to do. And that fed that grandiosity of like, I'm just going to go as hard as possible as long as I'm checking this box. But, you know, my emotional life was a disaster. My relationships were a disaster. I had zero spirituality. I had no ethics. I would lie, cheat, and steal whenever I could, right? Mm-hmm. Like everything else was in shambles, but I was doing good at the grades, right? And like, I did have a couple jobs, you know, like money was coming in and I was making good grades. And like, for me, that justified everything.
Yeah. I remember, you know, Mike's wife telling me something. I mean, at the time it destroyed me. But now it's something I live by. Is she said, do you really think you are who you present to be? And I was like, ooh, no, I'm absolutely not. I present as this guy who's got it all together, who's, you know, who's successful, who's, you know, all these things. And I was none of those things. You know, I could act it very well, but I was none of those things. Whereas today I live by authenticity. It's like everything that I am is like who I am, right? I try to really exist, you know, authentically. And that means, you know, the same thing you were telling me, that I'm weak sometimes, that I'm not doing good, you know, that I sometimes I'm not doing great, you know? And to be able to tell somebody that feels so much better than carrying that around. You know, I think you're absolutely right that this idea of like, you know, manhood means you just bear everything. You got to have big shoulders so that you can carry all this weight for not just you, but for everyone else. And you don't complain about it. You just forge forward. And that was definitely what I thought it meant. You know, what I learned is that like the people who care about me want to hear about that. Even if they can't do anything about it, they want to know like, hey man, I'm not doing great today. You know, I'm not doing great today. I'm a little overwhelmed, you know, or when I am doing great, you know, is the weird thing about being a man, right? We don't get to say, oh dude, I'm doing amazing today. I'm having a great day. Like the sun is out. It's a beautiful day. We don't get to do either extreme. We just kind of, you know, good.
Kind of grunt, right? Be like, keep on moving, right? Like, it's just, that's our answer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, that it feels a lot better on this side. I think, I guess the point I was making, getting to is that, I had to create this community. I think a lot of times, at least I thought that I was just going to walk into this ready-made network of friends and that I was just going to walk in. It was already made and I would just like slip right in, you know? and everything would be fine. What I'm finding is that I have to, my friendships are as good as I am a friend. You know, I have to foster and build this community. I have to call and check on people. If I want people to listen to me when I'm not doing great, I have to listen to people when they're not doing great. I have to be the friend that I want. Not just karmically, but what it also does is it teaches my friends how I want to be treated. It builds this community. And it doesn't happen overnight, but I'm finding that, you know, between that and healthy boundaries about knowing when someone's not good for you, and being able to say, I think you're a great person, this just doesn't work, has been amazing at building the community that I need for long-term recovery.
Yeah, I want to dig into kind of the tactical part of building community, because, you know, so many men, especially when we get over 25 into our 30s, even 40s, right? Like they report having zero friends. Like when they survey men, they say zero friends, or they say one with a caveat of that's their partner, right? Like they don't have friends. And I think, like, you know, in things like college or in school, right? Like it is kind of given for you, because there's so much time in community and there's so much structure and there's so many times you're going to hang out or have sleepovers or you're in a sports team or whatever, right? Yeah. Like there's like so many opportunities. And similar to you, like I put a ton of work into my community, right? I'm always hosting events. I'm always like creating spaces for people to get together. I'm always trying to reach out and get people to do stuff, right? And that's exhausting, right? I mean, like it's worth it, but it is like a part-time job. Like, you know, I'm like a community manager. And I think a lot of guys either don't realize that or don't feel skilled at that or struggle with rejection, especially if they haven't been humbled. But I'm curious, your thoughts on how do you make friends when you're like 35 and older, you know? Cause I think it's a real problem that a lot of dudes are struggling with.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing is it's going to be awkward.
Yeah.
Like just embrace that. You know, it's gonna be awkward at first. But what I found, I think, was really encouraging for me was when I started doing those things, right? Hey man, I'm gonna take a walk around the park today. You wanna come? Mm-hmm. The guys who took me up on that afterwards they'd be like, dude, that was so great. Thank you for doing that. Can we do that again? And it's like, well, yeah, you know, but it was awkward to like, you know, pick up the phone and call another man and basically ask him on a man date. You know, it's not that it's not going to be awkward. It's going to be awkward. I think the other thing is to, especially in the recovery community and outside of it, I'm sure too, is to recognize that like, a part of getting to know other people is getting to know myself too. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of things that in active addiction and even before that I dismissed because I thought I didn't like them. You know, it turns out I love the art museum, you know, but the first time I went in recovery, I was like, why am I doing this? This is whack. Like, why am I doing this? And I was like, dude, you don't know what you like. You didn't do anything that didn't serve beer before. So you don't know if you like this place or not, you know? So that kind of discovery, that kind of like walking into new things and new situations and having somebody there with me has been great. You know, somebody to walk through it with me that I can in real time process it. Hey man, what do you think of this? And let's look at this. Or, you know, those things, just being open to kind of discovering who I am has been huge.
I think that's so big, right? Because I think a lot of dudes, we get stuck. Our personalities get stuck. It's like, yeah, I'm in the same stuff I was into in high school, right? I like sports, you know? I like video games. I like drinking, right? And you can see it. You can see there's like some guys that never quite grew up and never quite like took a risk, you know, like going to the art museum, right? Or picking up a new activity, right? Or trying something new like camping or water sports, literally whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think it comes back to that humility piece. You know, the thing that I really work on my guys in my practice with is like being good at being bad at stuff, because there's always that phase where you just suck ass and you're just bad and you're the weakest one and you're like, don't know what you're doing. But if you can learn to be good at being bad at stuff, the world's your oyster, you know?
100%. I I recently, you know, I'm a musician and I've played like gospel and R&B my whole life.
Very cool.
And recently somebody asked me if I wanted to play in a country band. And I was like, yeah, sure. Well, why not? You know, and I get in there and yeah, man, I suck at country music. You know, there's some stuff that I'm just not good at. But now I'm, because of like you said, humility, I'm able to have this experience that I otherwise would have completely cut myself off from, you know? And so I'm able to have it and enjoy it. And like, yeah, man, I don't know that I'll be, you know, trying to get inducted into the Grand Ole Opry or anything like that, but I'm enjoying myself. And it's something that I don't think I otherwise would have let myself do.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, we'll talk about it kind of in the next segment about what modern masculinity is, but there's this toxic masculinity piece, which is just what you said, which is like deep insecurity, right? We're like, a guy will say, hey, you want to play country? And then like the toxic way is like, no, country's stupid. Like I would never do that. Like you just like hit it with judgment. But like the real reason is like, I'm scared, right? Like I'm scared. I don't know how to do this. I don't want people to judge me. Like it's not coming from a place of strength at all. You know, it's coming from a place of insecurity.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I think, you know, that's, you said the magic words, you know, it's like, I'm scared.
Yeah.
I'm scared. And like, that is so much of like, I think healthy fear is very important. You know, I tell people all the time, I should have been afraid of doing meth, but you know, like you said, that kind of task, I'll be fine. I'm the man, dude. I do all kinds of stuff that normal people shouldn't do. Like I'll be fine. I should have been afraid. I should have been like, you know, I'm really afraid of that. I don't know if I'll come back from that. And that would have been great, man. That would have been great. But
would have helped. It would have really helped. Yeah.
You know, I was too manly to be like afraid of anything, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I think that's very important. That ability to just flat out say, I'm scared of that. Maybe I should try it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that was so much of my drug story too. You know, I would just like take, smoke anything, right? Like, because I just didn't want to look like a pussy, right? Like they're like, oh yeah, you want to like do this line of coke? I'm like, oh yeah, done coke tons of times. Like I really, you know, no problem for me. Whereas like, I was a nerd growing up. Like I didn't know about any of this shit, you know? Like I just like didn't want to be judged and it got me in too far, too deep, too fast.
100%. 100%. 100%, dude. And yeah, man, today it's a lot different. You know, I'm afraid of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and some fears is worth leaning into and some fears is probably there for a good reason. So
yeah, you know, and being able to say it out loud helps me decipher which one of these that is, you know, like, yeah, man, I'm afraid of jumping out of this plane. Maybe I'll do it though. If you know the safety precautions and you can talk me into it, maybe I'll do it.
All right. Well, we're going to move to our next commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about tactical steps, how to build community. Also kind of talk about, yeah, I think managing male emotions and kind of what modern masculinity looks like for you.
Cool.
You know, what your definition is. So hang on in there and we'll see you on the other side of the commercial break.
Voice America is on LinkedIn. Connect with us today.
Men's Therapy Online is now accepting new members. Men's Therapy Online offers a solution to the lack of outlets for emotional expression, positive role models, and access to meaningful milestone experiences. In our post-COVID world, loneliness is at an all-time high. Men need consistent community. Our society is rapidly changing. Old models of masculinity are falling at the task of promoting emotional intelligence and meaningful connection. Men's Therapy Online offers tools and experiences designed to help the man who is struggling to balance traditional male roles and emotional fluidity. Whether you need to get back on your feet or take your life to the next level, Men's Therapy Online has your back. We help our members become a true 21st century man, a man who is not burdened by the rapid change of society, but who contributes to it honorably. If you're interested in signing up and finding your band of brothers, go to menstherapy.online to learn more. That's menstherapy.online. Start your journey today.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Men's Therapy Podcast with Mark Azoulay. To reach the show today, please call 866-472-5791. That's 866-472-5791. Or send an email to podcast@menstherapy.online or visit www.menstherapypodcast.com. Now, back to the Men's Therapy Podcast.
Welcome back to the show. Rashad, I just want to dive right into it, right? Like, what is modern masculinity to you? Now that you've been through all this, you've learned so much shit. Like, what does it mean to be a man? Big question.
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. You know, it goes back to when I was very early recovery. I had this incident where someone, you know, disrespected me, and I was telling my sponsor, I was like, "But you know, this recovery stuff is cool, but like, I'm a man, dude. I'm a man. You're not just gonna talk to me any kind of way." Mm-hmm. And he was like, "What? What does that mean? Like, why? You know, why are you letting this bother you so much?" And so that really sat with me, right? This idea of that was what I identified as like men is people who confront things, who are, you know, respected and probably a little scared of me, you know, that sort of thing. I think I've been dealing with this for a couple of years now, right? What does that mean to me? And I think really and truthfully, I think it means modern masculinity to me is being able to be authentic. You know, I kind of said it earlier, but I think that's really it. I think, you know, some people, some men really are, you know, muscle head competitor guys. And that's awesome. As long as it's authentic. Other people are more artistic and probably a little daydreamy. And that's fine. I think modern masculinity is being able to lean into whatever is authentically you without demeaning, demoralizing, or belittling anyone else for being themselves. Having the strength of character to be yourself without demanding that of anyone else, I think is kind of what modern masculinity means to me.
Well, so let me ask you this, right? Like, how do you know who you are? Right. because again, it's like a lot of guys that I work with, when you ask them like, "Hey, what do you feel about X, Y, and Z?" They often say, I don't know, or I don't feel anything, or I feel pissed. Right. Like, we're allowed to be like happy, angry, and horny. It's basically the only three feelings we get as a man. So I'm just wondering, I think authenticity is key. All right. So what has that journey been like for you?
For me, it's been a mixture, right? I think, you know, not everybody, as you're kind of mentioning, right? Not everybody's going to have this kind of beautiful journey of discovery that is recovery that I've had. You know, we do a lot of work around identifying our fears and resentments, you know, confronting amends and really kind of like this deep dive into who you are and who you want to be. On this end of it, though, I've been doing personally, it feels like, a plug, I promise you, it's true and authentic. I've been doing a lot of therapy. And right around the time where I was ready to kind of quit, I was like, what am I doing here? This is, I come in here, I talk to this dude, and like, I don't understand what I'm doing. Right around that time, he said, you know, I think we're hitting upon why you're here. I think you're trying to figure out who you are. And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh yeah, that feels accurate. And for me, it's been amazing, right? To have someone to bounce these ideas or even just scenarios, right? Things that I've gone through in the time since the last time we met, and really kind of flesh out how those things made me feel and why I reacted in the way that I did. And that has been an amazing journey of self-discovery for me. For those, you know, like I said, without that recovery piece or even with it.
Yeah. So for a tactical thing, like, how do you encourage guys? What's a step that they can take to start to lean more into authenticity?
You know, for me, I put pen to paper. I can't really tell you other than what I do. I put pen to paper. I spend time with myself analyzing. I think about a lot. Which is why the therapy piece is great, right? I spend time thinking about my actions. And I take accountability for them, which sounds like a small piece, but it's actually really huge, right? Because if I'm going to be responsible for whatever my actions are, it makes me think about them a lot more, right? If I'm going to have to stand behind this, then I think about it a lot harder before I do it, right? It gives me that time to kind of process what I'm doing or what my stance is and why. I think the why is really important when developing authenticity. Why do I think that way? And being able to like challenge myself, you know, on the whys, you know, why am I doing this? Why do I feel this way?
Yeah. I think accountability is critical. Right. And I think it like a lot of guys don't take it. And I think it removes the good versus evil story that I think a lot of men live in, right? Mm. Like either we're the hero or the villain. There's no room for nuance. There's no room for gray.
Yeah.
And I think once we can start being authentic and take responsibility for our lives, you know, we can start to grow. You know, there's, we had a guest on a couple of weeks ago, Donald, and he had this great model that I want to run past you. I'm curious what you think. He talks about how, you know, in this process, we go from villain to victim to hero to guide, you know, and I'm thinking about that when I hear your story. And I think a lot of guys go through that, and sometimes we get stuck in villain or in victim, and we never really progress to those other tiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's, man, you're absolutely right. When I think about it, that rings really true. You know, I used to even identify as myself. Like I was always the antagonist. I always identified as the antagonist. And I think, like you said, I think a lot of that comes from not wanting to be accountable. So any of the things I did that I did that my soul didn't really agree with, I could always be like, well, I'm the bad guy. Of course,
me too. I mean, I get the villain era is real, you know? It's like, I guess I'm just the asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just that guy. I don't know. It's really wild, right? Because I never thought about that before. That is absolutely true. It allows me to escape the accountability for the actions that I don't necessarily agree with. Whereas today, I definitely, I don't know that I'm a guide in per se, right? That feels really lofty, but I definitely feel like the protagonist of this story, or at least this part of my story. You know, I definitely feel like I'm on the side of good in this point in my life. And it's, again, because I hold myself accountable. If I do something that I don't think is in line with that, then first of all, I'd look at it and try to figure out why. What was the motivation for that? I sit on it, right? And I really, and then I try to right any wrongs that it created, any harm that it might have created, I try to right. And that allows me to feel good about myself so much more consistently. You know, I think, I'll leave it there. Yeah, it allows me to feel really good about myself a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And not have that like inner villain, right? Or I think a lot of men have an inner coward. You know, we remember all those times where we backed down or didn't do the right thing. Or, you know, got scared. And again, like we're saying in the other segment, like fear's not bad. I think fear is like, it's telling you, hey, pay attention, motherfucker, right? Like notice what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, it tries to like wake us up and drop us into the moment. So there's a lot of like power and wisdom in fear. But I think cowardice, right, is like letting the fear win too many times.
Yeah.
You know, like having it keep you small.
Yeah, I think it's important, right? I do think fear is important, right? And it's like weird because I'm saying both things and I mean them equally, right? Sometimes, you know, you walk through that fear And I think that's important. And sometimes you should stop, you know?
Yeah. You know?
I think both are true. Yeah, man, it doesn't make you bad. Or like you said, a coward. I think when that fear is founded, when it has reason to stop you in your tracks, it should.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Jocko Willink talks about this, right? The idea of Navy SEALs, like they don't not feel fear, which I think is what a lot of men, again, like we talked about, don't want to try new things because they just like don't want to feel fear because they think that makes them weak. It's that Navy SEALs can operate while afraid, right? Like that's what their training is, like to be afraid and to go and do the thing anyway. And that's real strength to me, you know?
100%. You know, I think, you know, that's not my story, right? That kind of like, but I am a performer and I tell people all the time, like, hey man, if you're not afraid, you're not ready. Mm. If I'm not nervous walking on that stage, I'm not ready. I need to feel a little bit afraid. I need to feel a little bit of, oh, do I remember all these songs? Oh, do I, oh dude, I don't have a solo prepared for this. Oh, you know, I need that. I need that little bit of fear. I mean, I need to walk through it because walking through that, then I find triumph, right? If it wasn't a thing, then who cares if I did it or not, you know?
Yeah, it has to be a little bit challenging, you know? Yeah. And it brings me back to community because I think of your story, like just hearing, I think especially other men share their fears and share their triumphs and share like their themselves growing. I don't think there's anything better than that. And I think we need that. We need to just like stop posturing and stop like all just being as cocky as possible or all pretending that we're bulletproof because it's not really working. It's not really working for us.
Oh, no. No, dude, it's yeah, man. Me personally, like you said, I love this idea of being afraid and moving through anyway. What I love about being the man I am, the person I am, he's like, I'll tell you, hey, I don't like this at all. You know, I don't like this at all. I'll do it. You know, if it's something that needs to be done, but I don't like this. And what I found is when you're able to voice that, you inevitably, when I say things like that, some other man is like, oh yeah, man, me too.
It doesn't take that much. Yeah, you just have to be the first one to say it, right?
Oh yeah, this is horrible. Yeah, absolutely, man. 100%.
Yeah. So as we're moving towards the close of our show, what is a message you'd like our listeners to take away? What's something that they can hold for the next week?
Man, I thank you for this. I think the most important thing to know is that both you're worthy of love, and you're capable of giving love. Like your love is wanted and warranted. I think is the biggest thing to take away.
Yeah, really well said. Beautiful. So Rashad, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people find you online and learn more about you and what you do?
Wow. You know, I'm on the socials, I guess, just as Rashad Sutton. You can find me there. I'm really involved. I think I would like to plug this. We're really involved with Colorado Artists in Recovery, which do online workshops and that sort of thing. Not only just online, but in-person workshops for people in recovery, for people not in recovery, for people who just need an outlet, need to do some sort of art. And I also work for the Raleigh House, and you can find us. It's at both primary mental health as well as a substance use treatment center. You can find us at theraleighhouse.com.
Great. Well, thanks again for being on the show. If you're a listener, please like, subscribe, comment, do all the stuff. If you think that someone would be inspired by Rashad's message of love and authenticity, share it with them. The more listeners, more guys we get listening to this, I think we can start to really change the world and really make a difference out there. So Rashad, thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week, another episode of the Men's Therapy Podcast.
Thank you for joining your host, Mark Agelet, on the Men's Therapy Podcast. Be sure to tune in again live next Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel and anywhere podcasts are found. To support the show, leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. For more information or to apply to be a guest, visit www.menstherapypodcast.com.